Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM. It's time now for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
16 months ago, 17-year-old Trayvon Martin was walking home from a convenience store in Sanford, Florida, when he was stopped by a neighborhood watch volunteer named George Zimmerman. When the confrontation was over, Martin was dead, shot through the heart by a weapon that Zimmerman was carrying, and the nation has been reeling ever since. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. This past Saturday, a jury of six women acquitted Zimmerman of second-degree murder and manslaughter charges. This morning, we'll be talking with a number of folks about the impact of this particular verdict. In the studio, we have, of course, City Council Member Shaney Shields, also Orville Pinn. He is a community activist. And later on, we'll be talking in the program with Mike Prettle. He's a local attorney, also an activist, as well as involved with Marylanders to Prevent Gun Violence. And we'll be talking about the role that guns play in this. But first, I want to turn to Dr. Sylvester Beeman. He's with the Interdenominational Minister Action Council in Delaware, and of course that council and the ministers up there, particularly in Wilmington, have been organizing and talking about this issue. And first of all, I want to welcome you to the program.
Thank you.
So let me ask you first, and I'll be asking a lot of folks this. When you heard the verdict last Saturday or Sunday, what was your own reaction?
Shock, disbelief, disappointment, anger, and they kind of vacillated to move between the three or four.
And when you went to church that following morning, what was this mood of your congregation there?
Well, first of all, when I went to church, after not being able to sleep all night, I just tossed and turned after that. When I got to church, I arrive at my church every Sunday morning about 4 a.m. and to meditate, go over my sermon. We have three services, and so just to kind of get myself in a zone and prepare to preach. And then about 5:30, I just abandoned the sermon and abandoned the entire order of worship and decided that this was an unusual situation, and it called for unusual measures. And so we totally threw out the order of worship and the normal way of doing Sunday at Bethel. And I mounted the pulpit instead of wearing a robe. I called my wife and told her to bring me one of my hoodies. And I walked into the pulpit wearing a hoodie. And I'm sure at that moment the congregants knew something's different about today. But I have received from my congregation numerous emails, text messages. This morning when I got up and looked at the mail, there was something from one of my members just thanking her because we were able to articulate in the worship through scripture, through prayers, and the spoken word, the frustration, anger, hurt, disappointment that many in the congregation was feeling.
What did you tell your congregation that morning?
Well, I told them because I was actually dealing with my own sense of woundedness and the other emotions I mentioned earlier, that I then stopped working on my sermon and I just started weeping to God and asking God to give me some kind of clarity about what's going on. And as I discovered, as the Bible began to speak to me, that I then was able to speak to the congregation the same thing that I was feeling. So I just basically share with them that, first of all, that God has a justice that we know not of. Secondly, that he is a God of justice as well as righteousness and of peace. That we also need to love one another. And I think one of the scriptures that when I got to the point where Jesus was talking about loving those who hurt us and so forth, that's when the healing process really began for me. And so I just was sharing how spiritually God was addressing this hurt for me, and I shared that with the congregation.
Well, what do you think this verdict means in terms of the African American community and to young African American men? Because I know, and we'll be talking about this later in the program, a number of African American men, very high positions, very successful, have talked certainly on cable television about their own personal experiences in terms of facing guns or police. What kind of signal do you think this sends, and should young African American men be may perhaps more afraid?
Well, I think it validates a fear that has been dormant but is now emerging more and more, that in America race still matters. When I was a graduate student at Boston University back in the early 80s, I was walking through Brookline, Massachusetts. And if any of your listeners know Brookline, that's a very posh part of Boston area. And I remember seeing in my peripheral vision a police officer clutching his weapon, doing a double step. And I didn't pay too much attention. But then all of a sudden another cop car came around with the lights blaring and two officers running towards me. And they immediately informed me to get on my knees. And once on my knees, they told me to lay on the ground, face on the ground with my arms outstretched to my side. And they were frisking me, saying that our liquor store was just held up in the neighborhood and you fit the description. And I couldn't help but say to myself, yeah, I'm black. And so I think for young African-American males as well as middle-aged African-American men, it doesn't matter your age, you can be stopped just for being black. And you know, I've gotten been in some conversations with non-blacks, especially whites, who think that we are living in a non-racial society. But the truth of the matter is, and I'm going to go back to another incident in seminary, we had a class ministering to people in crisis, and we had to, one part of the course, I had to be crippled or to have a handicap for 24 hours. And I was blind for 24 hours. I had a blindfold on, and I had to be led around. And until I had that experience walking in a blind man's shoes, I did not have an appreciation and sensitivity for the plight of those who are handicapped. And so I say to my white brothers and sisters who perhaps do not see the nuances or the sensitivities about race in the George Zimmerman verdict, that unless you have lived this life as an African-American, going to the supermarket in a business suit, and I'll conclude on this point, and seeing a white woman clutch her purse after several white men have walked by her, but as soon as an African-American male dressed in a business attire walks close to her cart, she grabs a purse. And that has happened on numerous occasions for me.
Finally, I understand that your organization is having a rally. I think it's this weekend. Tell me a little bit about the organization and the rally briefly.
Well, the organization is the Interdenominational Ministers Action Council. It is an ecumenical organization that also has a relationship with the interfaith community. It is predominantly African American, but many of our members and associates are also white and Latino and so forth. And it was a council that was started back during the civil rights movement to speak to social issues and social justice in the community. And we're still active doing the exact same thing. Sunday we are gathering and saying that the faith community, along with the politicians, the business community, we are all standing and saying that we need, more than anything, this verdict lifts up the issue that we still live in a very racial and racially divided society, and we want to seek justice for Trayvon Martin and his family.
We've been speaking with the Reverend Dr. Sylvester Beames with the AME Church, also at Bethel, that is, and also with the Interdenominational Minister Action Council in Delaware, and we appreciate you joining us this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Rush.
Thank you. I want to turn to our in-studio guests. And Shaney Shields, first of all, you're a council member, and obviously you represent the majority district, as they say, on the city council. When you heard the verdict, what was your own reaction? Was it unexpected?
It was 50-50. Yeah. As I told you, I don't have cable in my house, so I've been reading it in the paper. And I go to McDonald's every morning, and I heard people talking about it. And some of the my friends felt that he was going to be found not guilty. We didn't understand it, but we felt that he was going to be found not guilty because of his color. One gentleman said, Michael Vick got time for a dogfight, lost everything. And another lady shot a gun in the air and received 20 years. And what is a black life worth? So what I felt is, what is a black life worth in this country? And I said, it's not worth 2 cents. When this man, they told him not to follow the boy. He disobeyed that. He's even been given the gun that he murdered Trayvon with. Now, as a mother who's lost a son, and you have a congressman that says get over it, the parents are never going to get over losing a child, especially this way. I haven't gotten over losing my son this way. I think about him every day. It's been 21 years, so 21 years I haven't gotten over it. But justice was done. Now, if the roles was reversed and Trayvon had killed Zimmerman, what would the verdict have been? If this lady got 20 years for shooting in the air, what would Trayvon gotten?
And Orville, what about you? What was your own reaction when you heard it? Surprise or expected?
Yeah, a bit surprised. I thought the charges, I thought he would have been found guilty of manslaughter. A close friend of mine, we talked fairly frequently. We had spoken the night before, and he predicted it right down to he said by Saturday, shortly after 24-hour period, a verdict would be rendered, and he said it would be not guilty. And when he said that, I found it surprising because the jury came back and they wanted some clarification on what manslaughter meant. So I thought there was an indication that they might be headed in that direction, but it didn't happen that way. So I was a bit surprised. But as I listened to the dialogue then and now, to me the real culprit is understanding how the laws of this land affects the courses of actions that people take. Now, we heard there was one juror who wanted to come up with an innocent verdict, but she could not render
a guilty verdict. Yeah,
I'm sorry, guilty, guilty verdict. She could not render that guilty verdict because of how the laws confined her and how it directed her. So I think the real concern is that we look at these laws that exist on the books, determine how they may adversely or non-adversely impact our community as a whole, and take the necessary courses of action to change those laws. I think that's very important because once the laws are changed, then jurors, regardless of who they may be, have no choice. The choice is minimized in rendering certain verdicts. I know I sat on the jury about 3 times, all criminal trials. And, you've got emotions that want you to go a certain way because of what you heard and what you saw. But you're instructed by the judge. You're instructed that you cannot allow personal feelings to come into the matter. And the fact that the defendant did not take the stands should not suggest guilt or innocence in one form or fashion. But you're instructed. You're instructed in what the laws are, and you're confined to what the laws are. And I think in this case, the jurors, were confined to what the laws of the state of Florida was. And I think the real resolution to issues like this is, let's look at what the laws are and determine whether or not these laws may produce some form of bias or prejudice towards some group or an individual of individuals in our community, and work with them accordingly. Marching is fine. Protesting is fine, but the bottom line is we're governed by the laws of the land. And if we want to bring about true changes, we must work towards adjusting and modifying, changing, eradicating those laws that may not be in our best interest.
I want to actually play a short piece that we did because we had somebody go out and talk to a number of people in the African-American community. We're going to go ahead and play that, and we'll come back after them.
The not guilty verdict out of Sanford, Florida this past weekend has cut deep into the racial divide that often goes unnoticed for many. The death of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin at the hands of George Zimmerman some 16 months ago has produced a cacophony of voices from defenders of Zimmerman to the family of Martin. Here in Salisbury, there are those in the African-American community who see the verdict being summed up in one word.
I actually feel that the case is a travesty.
I think it's a travesty, actually.
I feel as though that it wasn't a fair trial. I don't think the prosecutors did a good job.
Those are the voices of Andre Henry. He's owner of the Classic Cats and Boutique, a barbershop. Also, the Reverend Dr. Luther McKinney from St. Paul AME Zionist Church, and Rob, a patron of the barbershop, all from Salisbury. The disillusionment is clear. Barbershop owner Henry says the verdict makes him feel the justice system does not work for the African-American community in this country.
That little acronym that people use, it seems like a just us system. It works for other folks, but it always seems like it turns against us.
Perhaps the question that looms over the trial, no matter what the verdict, is why Trayvon Martin was singled out by neighborhood watch volunteer Zimmerman in the first place. During the trial, it was suggested by the defense that it was the result in part of the recent spate of burglaries in the neighborhood, ones that were perpetrated by at least one African-American male. Zimmerman's attorney resisted the term racial profiling. But barbershop patron Rob observes.
They tried to portray him as a thug, you know, somebody wearing a hoodie and walking around with his hands in his pants like he was a troublemaker. You know, man, the only thing he was guilty of was just going to the store for his little brother, getting some Skittles. I just think it was wrong.
The phrase walking while black has now made its way into the living rooms of America as commentators begin to dissect the implications of the verdict and the case. Reverend Dr. McKinney with the AME Zionist Church.
They could have promoted the fact that Trayvon Martin was actually trying to defend himself. If someone's chasing you, what are you going to do but stop and ask them, what's the problem? What do you want? Not knowing that they have a weapon that they're going to use against you and that they're trying to prove a point, all you want to do is go home.
And if history is believed to be long and forgotten, not so for barbershop owner Henry. Even if the segregationist era of Jim Crow officially came to an end over 50 years ago.
This happened once again down in the South. And in my opinion, looking back on history, this is almost similar to Jim Crow law. You know what I mean?
After the verdict, defense attorney Mark Amar told the press that he believed if his client had been black, he would not have been charged. He cited the public uproar that ensued when his client had not been arrested initially. Barbershop owner Henry says there is no doubt in his mind what would have happened if the roles had been reversed.
Man, you know, had the shoe been on the other foot, had that been an African-American kid, if it had been vice versa, that gentleman would have been charged that night and probably would have already been prosecuted in the media. That's how I feel about it.
Ever since the election of President Barack Obama, the first African-American to hold the office, the issue of race has risen to the forefront of public discussion. Initially, the president noted after the shooting that Martin was someone who could look like his own son. The president and first lady, of course, have two daughters. But there was immediate criticism of his remarks that race was being introduced by the chief executive of the nation. For Henry, there is a long history of what he believes disrespect for the president.
Even when he won his seat in the White House, they questioned him and kept questioning him for months and months and months and months on end about his American citizenship. It was profiling. It's the same thing.
Henry says there is a sense of isolation for the African American community.
In a sense, it's almost like we're a nation within a nation, you know. And it's sad that we have to be that way. Yes, we've made some gains, and do we appreciate it? Yes, but at the same time, just as well as we're making gains, there's always something to slap you in the face to let you know that it's still prevalent.
The Reverend Dr. McKinney with AME Zionist Church believes that the country is fracturing.
We as a nation have to come to the realization that we're not doing what it what our Constitution means. We're not indivisible, and we're not showing freedom for all and justice for all. And we are a nation that's not under God. And if you're not under God, all you're going to do is fall apart. And that's what we're doing. Left, right, and in between, we're falling apart as a nation.
So what is next? Some, including the NAACP, are urging the Justice Department to bring a civil rights case against Zimmerman. For Dr. McKinney, he fears that the Martin case and the national introspection that it has produced could easily fade as time passes.
Every time there's a crisis, we come together and we pray. And then a week or two later, we go back to doing the same things that we were doing before. We need to make a difference and make a stand on righteousness and justice and have justice for all. We need to make sure that we don't judge a man by the color of his skin, but by what he brings to the community. And we are a community that's falling apart.
These interviews were gathered by the newsroom's intern, Johnny Pollard. This is Don Rush for Delmarva Public Radio.
I want to turn to a phrase that was used, and that is a nation within a nation. That the idea the African-American community feels that way, this isolation, and for a lot of white folks, that probably comes as a surprise since it's been certainly, as I noted, about probably 50, 60 years since the official end of Jim Crow. We've had certainly a lot of progress in terms of economics, in terms of a growing African-American middle class. Obviously, the president is now first African-American, and yet there's an isolation that exists. What about that, Shaney?
I don't feel isolated, but I feel that we are treated different.
Mm-hmm.
And where I disagree with my brother here.
I thought we would.
I don't understand the laws.
Uh-huh.
But if we use the laws and treat the African-American fairly with the law, I could agree with maybe changing some of the laws. But you can just start in the school system. A white child can do the same thing that a black child does. The black child will get suspended. The white child will be sent to the guidance office. Or if Billy has a bad day because her parents got divorced, he'll be sent to the office. If Johnny, the black child, does something disruptive, he's sent to the office or suspended or sent to alternative school. You can just look at the penal system. It's a form of slavery. Most of the people in there are people of color, blacks mostly. You look at the alternative school, same thing. So it's, we're not treated fair. But I believe how we can protest is by voting.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily voting for African American, but voting and show our power of the vote. I also suggest stop going to the mall one day. All blacks stop shopping. Just stop going and show what your money is worth. Because money speaks too.
Yeah.
But we're not willing to make that sacrifice. One day, just one day, do not go to the mall or buy gas one day and see what happens. And then people will take a look that we do have power in this country. And we're part of this country, although we came unwillingly, but we're still part of this country and we're not going anywhere. So we need to vote for our best candidates. And that's the main reason, a way that you can protest this decision.
Well, what about you?
I agree with what you said. I agree. I mean, we've got to change law. What do we do? You mentioned the school system. You cited a couple good examples there. What do we do?
I got to answer.
What do we do? What do we do? I mean, as long as our world has existed, people have disliked people because of their color, because
hair,
where they came from, because what they look
skin.
Like, because they made more money. And that's going to happen from now until this world continues to exist. I mean, we're not going to eradicate that. We can minimize the impact of some of this, however, by exactly what you said and what I shared earlier. We've got to be involved in solutions, which means changing laws. It means getting people to be in positions that can influence and affect and impact what we're all about, but that's what we've got to do. We're not going to eradicate those things that you've mentioned. One of the questions I had going back to the jury was the jury selection.
Oh, yes, exactly.
I had a concern about that. You had, what was it, six persons, five...
Five were white and one was Hispanic.
And if I'm not mistaken, our Constitution says of like peer or someone to that effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, jury of your peers.
Jury of your peers. I mean, I had some questions about that. And as a matter of fact, I went back and I've been doing some studying, trying to find out why there were no juries of peers, persons of peers selected on the jury. So that's something I was looking at also. But I've got to go back to that other point. We've got to identify what the problems are. Not the problems, not symptoms of the problems, but the problems. And then we've got to put solutions in place that addresses those problems. We've got to change laws. We've got to get people into these positions of influence and decision-making that understands the importance of, Shaney, the things you've just said. Until we do that, I'm going to continue to dislike you because your hair looks different than mine. I'm going to continue to dislike you because you live in Salisbury, grew up in Salisbury, and I grew up someplace else. You know. So.
Right. I want to bring in Mike Prettle here. He's a community activist, been involved with the gun control issue. And obviously one of the elements in this is the concealed weapon. I mean, this is, if George Zimmerman had not had the weapon, Trayvon Martin most likely would be alive. What about that element? And obviously there's some challenges even now going on in terms of the Maryland gun laws.
Well, what people don't know and what hasn't been said too much is that Florida is probably in the thralls of the NRA more than any state in the union. Mm-hmm. I mean, when the so-called Stand Your Ground law was signed, the person standing next to Governor Bush was the NRA lobbyist. That law has been written by the NRA, working with their friends with another organization called ALEC. 24 states have now adopted the Florida Stand Your Ground law. Frankly, I agree with virtually everything that was said, except that I don't agree that the jury disregarded the law. Emily Bazelon, who writes for online magazine called Slate, wrote an article saying, Zimmerman's not guilty, but Florida sure is. Blame the state's bad laws for Trayvon Martin's death. It was, frankly, I thought it was the verdict was a foregone conclusion. Mm-hmm. I think there was no way in the world that they could have convicted Mr. Zimmerman based on the Florida law, because the Florida law is bad. And that's the law that the NRA and ALEC are proposing all across the country. And, you know, and I think it's outrageous that we let the NRA tell us what the criminal laws of this country should be. And, yes, we need to change the law. Frankly, Maryland is the most educated state in the union, and I think we have one of the best, not gun control, but gun violence prevention laws. The bill that was signed by Governor O'Malley just this spring goes a long way. It's probably the most enlightened law in the country. But we can't do much to affect the Florida law unless we could go back to Congress and get Congress to adopt some national standards, yeah, which we've all been advocating.
One of the interesting things about this case is that the Stand Your Ground law, which is what everybody's talking about, it obviously, that particular rule was not used. However, as I understand it, the jury instructions were influenced by the Stand Your Ground. As a matter of fact, the juror who has spoken out afterwards mentioned that.
Didn't use those words, but the standard, the law of self-defense has been worked out for the last 150 mm-hmm. years under Anglo-American law. And what the Stand the Ground law does is change that completely. It says if I go up to you and I poke you in the nose and you hit me back, then I can shoot you and kill you. You know, so I can be the provocating cause of a crime, and yet I walk away scot-free. There have been hundreds of people who have successfully used a defense under the Stand Your Ground law, whether Absolutely. They call it that or not, across the country, and most Absolutely. Of them are racially tinged situations, as we've talked about here. So it is very much a law that's being used by the NRA and by people who are racially motivated, in our judgment, to create the effect that they want, and that is to keep African Americans out of lily white neighborhoods like the one that Trayvon Martin walked into back a year and a half ago.
It is virtually. We got maybe about a minute left. Overall, I'm going to start with you. Any final thoughts about where we go from here?
Law changes, one. We've got to realize what Mike said. I agree with 100%. I am hoping that civil rights charges are brought against. I think in a civil rights case, I think there will be some guilt found on Zimmerman, because the burden of proof, if I'm not mistaken, is just a preponderance of the evidence in a civil case, whereas in a criminal case, beyond a reasonable doubt. So the burden of proof is a whole lot less stringent in a civil case as in a criminal. But law changes. Very important. We've got to change laws. Once we change laws, I think we begin to erode these issues and challenges that we've had.
Shaney, what about you?
I agree with Dr. Behrman, the phone caller, that God has his own justice. And I do also agree with Oral Penn to bring civil rights charges. I don't think Zimmerman will ever have any peace in his life again for this. And I think that it also, as Dr. Bremer said, it validates that we still have a race problem in this country, and educate people on the laws of the land. And that's what we had Mothers for Equal Justice. It was all about at my church, teaching mothers whose children were in the penal system about the laws of the land. It may not be right, but they needed to know what the laws were in order to see why their children got involved with the justice system.
We've been speaking with council member, city council member, Salisbury City Council member, Shaney Shields, also Orville Penn. He's a community activist, as well as Mike Prettle. He's a local attorney, also involved Marylanders to prevent gun violence. And at the top of the show, we had the Dr. Sylvester Beeman. He's with the Interdenominational Minister Action Council, as well as with the Bethel AME Church up there in Delaware. We appreciate you guys all coming by and talking with us.
Thank you, Don.
This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
Delmarva Today is a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Don Rush is the host. Chris Rank is the executive producer and audio engineer. You can listen to this program again on our website, DelmarvaPublicRadio.net. You can also view our program on PAC-14 television and on demand. Visit PAC-14.org for full details and schedules.